world-class racing, and so much more at the Great Race Place. Be sure to join us for special holiday racing this Monday, Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Monday is also Dollar Day, with $1 beers, sodas, and $2 hot dogs. And be sure to check out our all-new First Coast to Coast Pick 5. It's a $1 minimum bet with a player-friendly 15% takeout covering five races at Santa Anita and Gulfstream Park each Saturday and Sunday throughout our classic meet. The NFL playoffs are here, and you can play in our $18,000 Santa Anita Pick'em contest each weekend. It's an online contest mixing popular sports props with $500 in prize money to the top winner each day. Fans, it's never too late to sign up for our $7,500 Showviver. It's free to enter and play. Just select one horse a day. You can play for free at santaanita.com/contest. First post time on Sunday and Monday is at 12:30.
Sirius XM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three, about 5 minutes in, and thanks to Dr. Allday for some horse help today, brought to you by Luperson and Reborn. And Andy, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Yeah. It's, I guess, I don't know. We're on the watch list now. Tina has advised me that if there's snow this week, I'm doing the work because I'm getting ready to go away on trips.
There's supposed to be snow this week. Well, normally she shovels a lot of walks in the neighborhood to make money for the family, right?
Yeah, she does. I send her out there, and she'll do the walks, and she also delivers papers. She gets up about 3:30, and she delivers the Glens Falls Post Star around town.
Is that the newspaper of Greenwich, the Post Star?
Pretty, yes. I would say those that still get home delivery get the Post Star. I think so. A little. I mean, the Albany papers, I don't see those. You know, you don't see it all anymore. I remember growing up, there were those colored tube boxes for the newspaper that the Hartford.
Because everybody reads the paper online, Steve.
I know it's gotten obsolete. Although
those people that read the newspaper, unlike you.
I subscribe.
You're
unbelievable. I have subscriptions online.
Yeah, whatever.
Wait a minute. I have the Post, the Inquirer, Philadelphia Inquirer, and the New York Times. So I would back off.
You got to get that Philadelphia sports news stuff, right?
Correct.
Going out to the Eagles Giants game, heading down.
I would love to, but I think we're gonna, I don't think so.
Who wouldn't want to freeze their ass off out in the football stadium?
Well,
to watch it on a big screen at home.
Well, that's a big part of it. And then there's this whole phenomenon, and you're somebody that goes to concerts,
not that often. I don't like going to concerts.
Well, yeah,
I really don't.
Not as much, I guess. Yeah, I guess not. Well,
I see a lot of dead shows. It's me. I love going to concerts. I mean, I've seen a lot of concerts in my life. And a lot of it non-dead stuff, to be honest, is because back when I was a kid, just going to friends on the weekends, whoever was playing. But I've obviously seen a lot more concerts than the average person, but I don't go very often. I really don't. I saw Pearl Jam at the Garden, but other than seeing them and the dead, I don't think I've been to any concerts hardly at all.
Yeah, I was thinking Pearl Jam for you. That's the
yeah, I know about 5 times. Other than that, I mean, it's not. I've seen Neil Young maybe 5 or 6 times. I'll try to go to SPAC maybe once in the summer for somebody I like playing, but it's hard. The timing's not great, you know?
Yeah.
I've seen Fish a handful of times.
I've seen Fish.
I've seen a lot of different acts, but I don't go to concerts, like, especially now. I mean, nowadays, I must never go. I mean, I go see Tedeschi Band at the Beacon. because they play there a bunch of nights. You know, it's around the corner from where I live, but it's not. I don't go that much.
Well, it's gotten, you know, there's obviously been a lot of publicity about what went on with what's her name, with Taylor Swift, with the, and how bad the ticketing.
The Ticketmaster thing is a disaster.
Yeah, it's bad.
That was the thing is, we're older, and when I went to many concerts, they were cheap, and you could scalp. You know, I was sort of done by the time scalping sort of disappeared in front of venues. You know, I remember seeing Guns N' Roses and Soundgarden, the Garden, in December of 91.
Wow.
We went 8-row center seats outside for $15, and that's what concerts cost. And it was not hard to scout and get good seats. It's just sort of different, obviously much different. But the Ticketmaster thing was always an issue. And I mean, the Dead was the only, I mean, Pearl Jam followed a lot of things the Dead did, acknowledging that they did that. I mean, I think they spent time with them. But the Dead got 50% of every arena's tickets, just split down the middle for the mail order. So you didn't have to deal with Ticketmaster. They're the ones that bought them and stuff, and they had some success, and they had such a following. They could do that with the arenas, but Ticketmaster is a disgraceful situation. It's disgraceful. It really is. If these tickets, you know, the idea of jacking up the price on these things was to get the scalper sort of out of the equation.
Right.
And Ticketmaster sort of become a scalper, from all I can tell. It's repulsive.
Well, and there's obviously, clearly, there's ticket brokering that are somehow buying up, you know, rows and rows of seats. And supposedly, you know, you go online, oh, limit of four, and yet when you then go to a reseller and you see that they've got, you know, entire sections that they've managed to glean, I don't get it. And last Tuesday, I was poised, I was on the air, so it was hard, but last Tuesday, tickets were going to go on sale at 10 o'clock, and so, I'm doing the show, but I'm trying to see about tickets.
It's not like you pay attention while you're doing the show, so you don't really need to.
There you go. And exactly. So I'm trying to poke around, and it became obvious that I wasn't going to get any. And then later in the afternoon, the tickets are, they've gone from, you know, up to $900 for a
seat. Right.
Get the fuck out of here. Come on.
Well, that's part of the thing. When you see these stories about them, it just makes you lose interest in wanting to go, because you feel like, I'm just going to get frustrated, and why get myself frustrated?
Yeah.
Just don't bother. And I mean, the thing, obviously with StubHub and SeatGeek and these things, especially if you're local, you know, I'll do this for the Nets, like if I wanted to go, you just wait until the afternoon of and see if they've gone
right
down. You don't
right
worry about that time. And if, you know, but I mean, it's not like, you know, listen, I go back far enough, you go to the night, you know, 80s, 90s when I lived in the city, and you know, just get a subway for a dollar to go down there, and I live close to the Garden. I could go to the Garden at 7 o'clock for a 7:30 game for the Knicks and see what tickets were like at 7:15, 7:20, and basically if there were a bunch of tickets around and people weren't buying and you didn't worry about counterfeit tickets out front, you didn't get the tickets. I get tickets for half price, and even face wasn't that much back then, I'd go to the game. If I couldn't, I'd go home and watch it on TV. And I'd spend $2 getting a token.
Hmm.
Most of the time I got good seats for very little. And that was fun. But I also got, you know, as you get older, it's getting older also, because, you know, I went to that game last Monday. I went to the Knicks-Bucks game. We sat upstairs in one of the suites, but it's just so loud. It's just a sensory overload. And I think it's partly, obviously, getting older. You're more, you know, it's tougher with all the noise and the loud music and all stuff. I just think it's just too noisy for me. I don't even think it's getting old. It's getting older, and it's just too noisy. It's like, because I watch a lot of games on the NBA package, and when they go to breaks, you have to remember to mute it. Otherwise, you get what's going on in the stadium, you know, in your apartment. It's just, it's awful. It's just the cacophony of noise and music I'm not interested in hearing.
No, I get it. It is. It's a... You know, an eye widening. I had that experience, and I enjoyed it in terms of the new stadium in LA, SoFi. Gary Barber invited me to the Charger Dolphin game, and I
think he looks back at that and regrets it. But anyway, we'll discuss that later.
It was an amazing experience. I mean, the place, but I mean, it's a nonstop activity, and
listen, obviously, it works because the NBA gets great crowds and football. And I'm sure they didn't just wake up one day and decide to do it. They studied it, you know, they understand their fan base, and it works. It doesn't work for me. That doesn't mean it's not working overall. I just don't particularly like it. You know what I mean? It's not. It's a personal preference. Like, obviously, in the grand scheme of things, what they're doing in the NBA and these football teams, whatever, it's working. So if it's working, they should do it. I just don't particularly like it.
Well, and that we can actually segue into the racing experience, and one of the game's real pleasures and qualities is that there's this complete range of experience. But we think about Saratoga in particular for this, but it's true in a lot of venues. You can come in for GA, for general admission. There's plenty of places where you pay no general admission. You come in completely free, or you can do a variety of seating experiences, and the game is so different in terms of being pastoral and relaxed. I mean, it's a throwback, one of the qualities, I think, that and appeals of the game.
I guess, yeah. I mean, it's each their own. It's different. I mean, it's also different for me, a different experience for me now in my life, what I'm doing. But, I never found when I played, you need the time between races. So, watching where you play.
I agree.
Et cetera, but it's, I don't know, it's a different experience for different people. I think it's important to evolve as your fan base evolves, or try to evolve as your fan base evolves. And obviously, in racing, with simulcasting, there are more races for people to bet if they so choose. But you take a day at Saratoga, I don't think the people that come to Saratoga I can't imagine it's that big a deal if there's time between races, because there's things going on. People to see, people to talk to. It is a long. It can be a long day at times, but people can also leave early if they want. But I don't know. I'm not sure about how you evolve as a racetrack, because you have to have a certain amount of time between races, right?
Well, yeah, and it's one of the things that it is really grating, or you bristle when you hear people say, "Oh, 25 minutes till the next race." It's like, what? Seriously? You got to be kidding.
I don't
get that. I don't get that complaint or the concerns. Yeah.
But once again, I there's enough noise in life. And I think I try every year. I try to tune out more and more noise.
Right.
With each year or time goes on, you learn to try to find the humor in things as opposed to worry about the stupid things that people say on message boards or Twitter and things like that. I think there's way too much hand-wringing by people about the idea of people being mean on Twitter. Just ignore them. People say a lot of mean things about me. People make up crazy shit about me all the time. I couldn't possibly care less. I think it's funny. Or you just don't see it, You mute and block. Who cares? I think it's sad that this is how people choose to live their lives, but who cares? I'm just amazed anybody has the time to talk about me at all. I wish I was that interested.
Well, I have brought people to the track, and they, after a couple of races, they're wondering, why is there so much time between races? Like, whoa, whoa, whoa. It's part of the...
Well, you're not doing a good job as a host, Steve.
I'm doing my best.
The track isn't for everybody, Steve.
No, that's a fair point.
The racetrack, that anything is for everybody, it's not. It's a niche sport. It has a certain appeal. And there are different things that can be appealing about it. And there are going to be people that haven't been exposed to it, but if they are, they may find that they get really fascinated by it, or fascinated at some level. And the idea is to increase the ability to expose people to it at some level. We're doing that with a lot of television. We did over 1,100 hours of TV last year. We're trying to bring that experience into people's homes, get more people to watch. Obviously, a place like Saratoga is an opportunity to expose new people to the experience at the racetrack. But you take 1,000 people and you show it to them. Hey, if 5 of them, 6 of them found that going forward is something they're interested in doing, there's nothing wrong with that. I think you have to accept that you're not going to make big scores, that you're going to, you know, try to increase things gradually. And it's always going to be a niche sport. And now there's obviously much more competition for the entertainment dollar and the gambling dollar. But, you know, people can bet sports all they want. There's a lot of publicity this weekend about somebody who bet $1.4 million on a football game.
Mm-hmm.
He was up 27-0 to win 11,000. He lost. What's interesting to me about that is that those kind of things have been going on for years. I have friends who gamble, they'll lay huge prices on things. And I understand where they're coming from, of the concept of equity and the chance of it. I mean, we don't look at things that way at the racetrack. We're always looking for ways to bet $48 and maybe win $2,000.
Right.
Obviously, not an easy thing to do. I mean, it's easier said than done, but these opportunities exist on an almost on a daily basis. They do on a daily basis. So when you play the horses, you're always looking for ways to, you know, win a lot by betting a little. That's not happening in sport events. Now, to me, one of the great things about racing is you make a bet. The race is run. I mean, you do a lot of preliminary work. I do it well in advance. But when you bet, you get the result within 2 minutes.
Hmm.
The thought of making a bet at a football game and agonizing for 3 hours watching it is, to me, it's agony. Listen, to some people, they must like it. A lot of people are betting on sports. I bet a lot of sports in my life, you know, in the old days. But I think it's agony. One of the reasons I stopped betting, it's like Paul Corbin said this years ago, it's like a 3-hour inquiry. And he's right.
I didn't realize it was Corbin that said that.
Years ago.
That's hysterical. That is the guy. I was going to reference that, but I didn't realize it was.
Yeah,
it was
it's a torturous occurrence. For horse players, at least the pain is over quickly, you know?
Yeah.
Quick torture. Or you make a score, or something happens. And if you're interested in handicapping, it's the puzzle, right? It's the, you know,
yeah.
It's the getting the solution, the answer to the puzzle very quickly. And the opportunity to be right or be clever or smarter than other people. The whole thing, it's a whole process. The process of handicapping, which I find fascinating, it's going to appeal to different people. The idea is to get as many people as possible exposed to it so that the very few or the small percentage that would be interested have a chance. Because there's definitely people roaming the earth that could be degenerate horse players if they just got the right exposure, right?
Very true. So, it's completely true.
Everything. It's exposure. People need to be exposed to things. Why they like it. There's probably people out there that would like the ballet. They've just never seen it.
Really well put. And it's one of those areas that, especially when you think about that survey from late last year that turned up, it actually didn't get nearly as much play as I thought it would. You know, the kinds of people that like that the game appeals to.
I don't think they. I don't think, and I could be wrong, but I don't think they surveyed the people on Twitter. But
the one thing that I mean, in terms of outreach for us industry wide, that. Has always occurred to me. I mean, the math clubs, there's all these, you know, there's still math clubs in high schools. Why couldn't we create a module the way Marshall Graham has done on the college level?
Well, because kids in high school shouldn't be betting at the racetrack. Listen, in Cerro High was basically just a big horse racing club when I was there, you know. Great guys like Ray Waldron, Coach Waldron, who was the administrator. He was, you know, I don't think there was a more popular guy around the racetrack than Ray. I mean, he sadly passed away too early. He's a wonderful, wonderful man. I'm sure some of your listeners knew. He passed away during the racing season, and the line to go into his wake up on North Broadway was around the block. But quite a few of my teachers I still see. People, you know.
Sure.
Working at the track, or people who play the horses, you know, Jim Matisse. Matisse is Chick's brother. Duke and Paul's uncle was a gym teacher when I was in high school. A great guy.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. No.
Oh, yeah. Jim's a terrific guy.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so. So I was a revolving horse playing club. Are you kidding me? Had an OCD there.
You know what? That's a natural. Well, and any community, obviously, Hot Springs, Saratoga, you know, the neighborhoods around Belmont and Aqueduct, obviously all of Kentucky and so forth. Well, Ohio. I mean, even people wouldn't think of it, but between the harness community, the standard bred breeding and racing interests, and all the fairs and everything else, Ohio is a place that it's a hotbed where everybody.
Right. Don't forget Saratoga, also the harness track going year round.
That's right. I know it's I don't want to call it a quandary, but it's something that that needs.
It's not a quandary. It is what it is. I mean, there's going to be a certain situation where there's a relationship. We have a town that has something going on where people are exposed to it more. So therefore, more people. Listen, I went to plenty of kids. I still have absolutely no interest in the track whatsoever. Probably never go. You know, it's not like everybody went, but a lot of people, more people did because they were exposed to it. And, you know, Saratoga, it's a fun afternoon. It doesn't bother me that a lot of people aren't interested in racing. It's not for everybody. Nothing good is for everybody. And you should never be insulted because the thing that you happen to find really interesting, or the thing or things in life other people aren't that interested. Okay, fine. Grateful Dead were a lot better before all the frat boys jumped in. I think every time Garcia died, you know, they got more popular. Until he finally died, then it was a problem. But I mean, up until 86, when he went to the first coma, they played a lot of smaller venues. You never had to worry about tickets. So it was good tickets out front. Things really changed. It got more popular. So popularity is not always a good thing. Though in racing, we'd be happy if more people were betting on it and going.
Well, it is an exposure. I mean, me as a case in point, my grandfather enjoyed the track, and he brought me to Aqueduct, but I didn't grow up around it. I mean, my father certainly had no interest at all.
Really?
Yeah, none. He liked pro sports, and was never a bettor. I mean, he wasn't even somebody that would, because you know what, he wasn't a bar goer, so he wouldn't get the betting cards or anything, and. You know, I knew people who did, and had friends whose fathers did play those betting cards and come home with, you know, with parlay sheets from the neighborhood tavern. But of course, I grew up for the most part, you know, by the time I was old enough to be cognizant, I was in Connecticut by then, as opposed to Long Island. So I think of myself, Andy, as a real, you know, petri dish for interest in the game, because you know, my friend Phil, I've told this story a million times. Phil went to work for Bob Brennan at First Jersey, and they started taking them to, you know, Garden State. And then Phil and I started going to Preaknesses when he moved to Alexandria. And I just got more and more interested and started going more and more regularly. And, you know, I've told the story of people make fun of the infield in Baltimore. That was my first. Preakness infields were my first real exposure on a regular basis to the game.
Everybody starts somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why you can't.
Now look at me.
Yeah. Look at me now. It's one reason, by the way, that we wring our hands when certain people around the game say, oh, we'd be better off if we got rid of the C tracks. No,
well,
we wouldn't.
There's a lot of misguided things that people say on the internet about everything. Face it, you know, it's one of the great problems in society today, misinformation on the internet. And people who recklessly pass along irresponsible information and recklessly attack people doing their jobs, but forgetting about that, to not understand the whole ecosystem of racing, that smaller tracks, exposing people to racing, getting them interested, but also to not understand the full crops and how the whole system works. At some point, the entire thing breaks down. You can't breed I mean, we have problems enough with, you know, 20,000 where the full crop is now. And you can't breed 4,000 horses and still get the same number of good horses. So a whole industry will suffer. You have a whole ecosystem that revolves around it. There's already a lot less racing. It's one of the reasons, you know, it all goes hand in hand with the bull crop. But to suggest that we just shut down the tracks and have three tracks running around the country, it's not going to happen. Then where are the horses going to come from? They're not going to be bred because the breeding industry will completely shut down.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
No. It's
also, listen, there's a lot of discussions about that, things people don't understand. It's like, you know, the complete misunderstanding of what took place at the New York Racing Association involving with the government and with the Racino at Aqueduct. People call it a subsidy and getting none of it's the opposite of that, you know.
Yep.
We own these properties, and it was going to go to court, and the state wouldn't have made the deal that they made if they thought they were going to win the court case. And in return for giving the deeds, and one of the worst economic decisions ever made by anybody, and will be admitted by the people who made it, because of a belief in the importance of horse racing and a love for the industry, Naira gets money from the slot revenue at the Racinos in return for handing over billions of dollars worth of property deeds, Saratoga, Belmont, and Aqueduct. There's no subsidy. There's no handout. There's nothing of the kind. There was a deal made. And you can misunderstand it and say all the stupid crap you want. None of it's true. And the reason, one of the main reasons it was done was the love of racing. Running racing in New York is not making anybody wealthy. Without racing in New York, the entire industry goes under, period. There are enough problems with what's going on in California. Without racing in New York, basically the industry goes under. And so it's all part of the same ecosystem. It was a big part of the discussion. And maybe it wasn't a great business decision that was made, but it was done in the best interest of racing. Call it dumb if you want, but that's what it was done. And that's one of the reasons it's painful to read all the misinformation and the mislabeling it. And, you know, reckless people like the representative whose office I have to see on my block every week, you know, telling lies and not understanding anything about racing going on. We're not getting a subsidy. A deal was made. A transfer of deeds for payments by the state.
Sure.
From, you know, that wouldn't exist without us. So it's all a load of crap.
Well,
there's so much out there, and there's so many misconceptions about racing out there, and situations. There may be different situations in states. I'm only intimately familiar with the one in New York State, and there ain't no subsidy going on, that's for sure.
No, nobody on the media front.
Bailouts, no subsidies, no gifts, all a bunch of crap.
Well, I
their own agendas.
Andy, you know very well that I banged this drum for years and years, and felt that, you know, it was potentially a death by a thousand cuts. The way, you know, particularly a couple of newspapers, the Times Union in particular, and then Downstate too, they seem to have relented. The tabloids that just continually mischaracterized everything that was going on, and did it without, you know, without any apology. I mean, it was grotesque, and a huge disservice. The Times Union, particularly, considering, you know, I'd be curious what the advertising revenue was for them during the racing season. I mean, it's preposterous. I mean, the way that they attacked.
I mean, legitimate inquiries and legitimate reporting is a good thing for us. You know, the industry can benefit from people. It's not like we're not doing things wrong. Any industry, anybody can benefit from responsible reporting. The problem is when there's reckless and irresponsible reporting. And it's always a problem if a newspaper has a specific agenda. Obviously, that's just muckraking. That's just, you know,
sure,
using your bully pulpit to make some points. But listen, that's gone on forever and probably go on forever. Fortunately, most people involved in racing, it's just noise. They don't listen.
Yeah, well, you hope so. But the ones that I haven't talked about this much in recent years, because we hopefully have moved beyond it. But the concern always was that if people kept hearing the same lies, like we're seeing on other topics around the world, if they keep hearing the same lie over and over, repeated. That's what gets drummed into their head, and they begin to believe it. And it's not, it's totally unfair. It does a huge disservice.
It does.
Yeah. So, well, here's a good service. Looking ahead to Thursday, Andy, and I know you've already done the work, but, there's a nice card on Thursday that I ended up printing the whole thing out.
Wow. All 17 pages. Must have got wild. You find more paper, did you?
mine printed out to 19.
Thought I was just 17.
Well, it's a nice card. Starts with a maiden group, then there's an allowance. The feature is quite good. Group of nine in the seventh. Some nice.
Seventh race is a good race.
Yeah.
I'll try to bring it up.
Thank you. I just want to get an opinion or two.
Opinion or two. Okay, hang on. I'm not sure how many opinions I really have at this point. But okay. Let's see. Don't really. Fortunately, it's supposed to rain.
This is 7/8.
The fifth race was a little interesting.
All right, hold on. Let me turn back to the fifth.
I thought the horse to beat might be Master Rauder on the outside. Making a bet. I was thinking of picking Running with Scissors, but I haven't really decided yet. I kind of like FF Rocket a little bit in the sixth. There were a couple of interesting horses in there. FF Rocket and the three Carrots. But they were potentially interesting. The seventh race is a good race. I agree. I'm not sold on Dr. Ardito. Kind of prefer Nabokov with the two Chads. And it was interesting to see Pat Fletcher finally turning back St. Tappet. I think the question with St. Tappet is, do you feel like he's just sort of deceased because it's a bit awful? Or if he was never a horse that wanted more distance and the cut back to seven furlongs will suit him well, he's undefeated in those, shorter one-turn races. So I thought that race was pretty interesting. I don't at this point have any strong opinions.
That's cool. All right. The point is,
it's only Tuesday.
I know.
Days to get ready for a big opinion. Do you have another guest coming up, Steve?
I've got Popo, but I actually am waiting to see if something of a surprise guest joins us. But
Tony Randall,
the Tony Randall, which is a running gag that Andy and I enjoy immensely.
So if Tony shows up, you're going to do it.
Before you go, actually, recap of the Busanda. I haven't had a chance to get to it yet.
Do you know who Busanda is? The dam of. I see. It's not going to come to you. You either know it or you don't.
No, you never know with me. Yeah, but all right.
She's the dam of Buckpasser.
There you go. Well done. Thank you. You've asked me that before, and it just doesn't stick in my head.
I don't think I have.
I think you have, actually. I think you trot this out like Final Jeopardy, and
I'm not sure of that. I forgot. My friend Steve was texting to me on Saturday. What do I think? I mean, I guess the winner's okay. It's hard to know. I mean, the two-year-old filly division, there's a lot of room at the top, so I wouldn't discount the possibility of any horse stepping forward. I think one of the things coming out of the race is it certainly didn't flatter the Demoiselle, because Graham's Maiden didn't run particularly well. Dodd's horse ran okay. She probably ran a similar type figure to what she ran the Demoiselle, actually. but it definitely didn't flatter that race. Now, it's possible that some horses move forward in the wet track, like Ram's horse, and it's possible that maybe the winner, you know, took a step back because of the wet track. But I think, you know, one of the horses that's on a lot of people's darling list is Julia Shining. And when the jury's way out on her, and, you know, the problem for Julia Shining is because she's a foal to Malathot, she's got shoes she'll never be able to fill, right?
Mm-hmm.
It would be kind of like if you had a, you know, like your brother, you know, no matter what he does, it's got to be a disappointing being Steve Biggs.
That's not true at all. You know that.
Never really, you know, even all his
ridiculous
success in the theater world, nothing compared to what you've accomplished. And you're, you know, as an annual Eclipse Award winner.
You're unbelievable.
We'll see. It'll be interesting to see with the three-year-old fillies. And Tom Ames, his big girl, is running, I think he told me, on February 18th. Down at Fairgrounds. Will you be there for that? Is that in your itinerary? Or are you not allowed at Fairgrounds?
I'm certainly allowed at Fairgrounds, and I don't know yet.
When's the last time you had Tom on the show?
Tom, it must have been December.
Time to give him a call. He's got nothing to do. I'm serious. Give Colleen a break.
He's busy planning. That's not true, because he's probably busy planning his Fat Tuesday.
He's pressing to do, actually, this year, I think he told me.
That's very funny.
And how quickly he chucked Serengeti Empress out of the bus, and quickly he's not going to be some of those jockeys that have like 37 best horses they've ever ridden. Now she's the best horse he's ever trained. So
to
quickly,
his
Serengeti Empress gone and forgotten.
To be fair, though, he said that about her before she ever started. So it's not like
he's proven it yet. So he's still going to continue with that.
It seems
that's a big leap to be better than Serengeti Empress.
Well, he was talking about her. I asked him.
I'm excited for him. I hope that she ends up being, if not the top horse in that division, one of them, because I think it's awesome. It'd be great for Tom.
I'm
still going to tease her about it nonstop.
Of course you will. I did see where she got some votes. People, some seemingly third.
Horse of the year. I think she got a vote for the for your Eclipse category. And then she finished Eddie. She got some votes for what? Horse of the year.
2-year-old filly. 2-year-old filly. Yeah, I saw her on some ballots.
Other person who's got their vote taken away. Nobody voted her first.
No, I don't. Well, wait a minute. I think I did see
well,
somebody.
That person should lose their vote. I mean, that's just absurd.
I think I did see somebody that
a lot of votes out there that should just be taken away. I mean, they should really be trimming 10-20% of the voters every year based on the kind of crap that's out there. Nobody can defend her as the Eclipse Award winning horse. That's absurd. He's a very important member of the media now, too.
Tommy?
All right, call Popo. He's sitting around, and whoever your mystery guest, well, Joe Bob or whatever, too late, not coming on.
He's in a hardware store. He asked me to give him a couple of minutes.
It's 11:43, Steve.
I know. It's going to be tight, but I just want to give the mystery guest is Tony Ocampo from Rose Hill Farm, The crazy coincidence that the two horses that Arno Delacour has won stakes with the past two weekends, both were bred by Rose Hill. Different owners, same owner, Mark Ryer, but just kind of a crazy circumstance, these two three-year-olds.
Okay, I can't keep up with this. I'm going to go. See you later.
All right, go there. Enjoy today, and we will catch up with Andy next week. Andy, in a typical Andy Serling visit. I'm just reaching back for the Tampa. Tony Ocampo is going to join us, and I'm going to save Popo for tomorrow so that we can do some handicapping with Form to Win. But to me, it was amazing. I mean, these two horses, Candidate and Opus 42. So I wanted to close the show out with the way we started, with that conversation with Arnaud Delacour. And I mean, Rose Hill has been, you know, a very nice breeding and boarding operation. And I thought, why not? Why not give Tony a chance to take a bow? Because this is a pretty nice accomplishment. And, you know, in terms of pricing, $150,000 for Candidate and Opus 42, I think was the slightly more, right? $185,000. So it, really a nice price range. And it's also interesting the way he bred. They've got partners in both of these horses. John Trombolovic partnered in the breeding of Opus 42 with the Lemon Drop Kid mare, and Thoroughbred Acadiana was Rose Hill's partner in Candidate. So I just wanted to, you know, to me it was too cool of a story. So let's see if he's set to go now. He said 10 minutes. It's been about 5.5, 6. See if I can't squeeze him in. See if he's finished at the hardware store. I know what that's like when Tina sends me out. Hey, terrific. Tony Ocampo joins us. And Tony, I had to reach out to you because I don't think this has gotten enough attention yet, has it? Candidate in Opus 42.
That's nice. I'm glad you called.
I said to Jason Barkley, because these are both Mark Grier, is the owner of both, but Jason said it was just kind of a coincidence. I mean, talk about your approach and tell everybody about Rose Hill and the offers and how you operate.
Well, you know, we're located in Fayette County, right behind Keeneland. We have 650 acres. And, you know, we're mostly a boarding farm, but, you know, we have about 50 mares that are, you know, owned by me, you know, by Rose Hill and her partners in some of them. So, you know, we breed good horses, you know, with the idea to sell. And so far, you know, we've done well. In particular, these two that we're talking about, one of them is my partner, you know, Candidate, the dam, Navy Ribbon. You know, my partner is Keith DeSormo, which is over at Acadiana.
How about that? Okay.
This was a late foal, May foal, exaggerator. I thought he was extremely athletic, good size for being a May foal. And unfortunately, he didn't bring much for us. But, you know, at that moment, exaggerator pretty much had been, you know, was done. So, I was ecstatic to see that he sold well as a two-year-old and what he's turned out to be.
This is obviously the upside here. That was the Dania Beach winner, and from Arno that, you know, that they're going to keep trying to stretch him out, and feels like this will be an important three-year-old on the turf side. And then talk about the filly, the Gasparilla winner.
Well, you know, Opus was gorgeous. Oh, it's a gorgeous filly, absolutely gorgeous. She was one of our favorites, you know, from a crop that, a very, very nice crop that we have. I mean, we had other horses selling for $550, you know, we had a really, really outstanding crop. This filly, we were a little bit disappointed because we thought that she would bring a little bit more money, in the July sale. We thought she was maybe at $250,000, $230,000. She only brought $185,000, but, on the other hand, when we saw that who had bought her, who was going to train her, and we met Mr. Greer right there at the sale, and he told us, don't expect a lot from us early because we're going to take our time. So I think, you know, we were excited that she was not going to be going to a two-year-old sale, and that that she would be, you know, that she's probably going to get every opportunity out there. And so far, you know, I think she ran a little bit green her first time out, and I think second she could have won it. I think either him or jockey got her, or the jockey got a little distracted and got caught at the end. But you know, we're glad to see which the way she's heading.
Well, and let me, you know, let me also fold in. I mean, you're how long has Rose Hill operated? You know, ostensibly on the commercial side, Tony, because I know Edgeway came out of your operation, and Stiletto Boy as well.
Yes, Stiletto Boy as well. Edgeway was, I mean, I don't want to take credit for something that we didn't do. Edgeway was, you know, I think she was sold at Crestwood, and she was sold in November. One of my clients bought her in November, so we had her from November all the way, you know, her yearling year. And she was a really, really nice filly that, you know, we were lucky to have. But, yes, Stiletto Boy, you know, and then we also had a couple other, you know, Monsieur Coco is a Bolt de Oro that unfortunately did not draw in. And then another filly, nice filly we had from the same crop with Opus and the candidate is Chocolate Gelato. Chocolate Gelato was, you know, who won, you know, a grade one and is owned by Ripoli.
Of course. Of course.
But, you know, Rose Hills has been, you know, we've been in, you know, in operation since 1999. But, you know, really on the commercial side, the way we're now is probably in the last 6 years. You know, before, you know, we're not as big. We're mostly, you know, boarding and breaking. But now, you know, we're starting to focus more on breed to sell. And, you know, all this is, I'll tell you that, like, for example, the Dam of Opus, since she's a filly that we claimed for 30, you know, that we followed and we lost in a couple of shakes, and we've done well. We've done well. We also had another, you know, stakes place for Brigadier General. You know, it's also a Johns Cross mare that we claimed. So, you know, we kind of look where we could find something that we cannot afford at the sale. And, you know, so far we've been lucky.
In terms of how you bring your horses to market, what's your preferred avenue?
You know, we do everything. I mean, we have, you know, we only prep about, you know, 15 for September 18. I mean, which is a good number for us. But you know, we start early and we start slow, but, we are better yearlings. I like to swim them. So we are fortunate to be very close to Kessmark. You know, we're just a couple miles down the road, but we do a lot of hand walking. We do hand walking. Rose Hill is blessed to have some fantastic fields with a lot of hills. So we walk. I try to walk when I can with my crew. We probably have about 12 guys that we're walking every day. I cannot do it every day, but I try to do it too. And we also have a exerciser where they walk, mostly for getting fit. But I think the hand walking is crucial. And the swimming is something that really, we cannot swim them all, but we try to swim the ones that we have probably the most upside at the commercial level.
Are there siblings coming up behind Candidate and Opus 42?
Yes, we are. I tell you what, Candidate has a half sister by Bolt de Oro, which, as you know, is a leading freshman sire from 22. Nice big Bolt de Oro filly that probably, you know, I would think we're going to go to September. And then Opus has a half brother by Heartspun. Beautiful, beautiful colts. And also, we sold a Munnings by half to Opus this past July. I'm sorry, this past September. So we have, you know, unfortunately, La Cuesta, the Dam of Opus, you know, she fell late, and we gave her the year off. So she is booked, and she's going to go to Golden Pal. And
wow.
Let me see, Candidate, the Dam of Candidate, she is in full. to Cairo Prince, and she's going to go to, early voting. She's going to early voting.
Interesting. On that topic, joined by Tony Ocampo to talk about Rose Hill Farm and the amazing back-to-back weekend success that Mark Grier had as an owner with Arno Delacour. We talked to Arno at the beginning of the show, candidate winning the Dania Beach, Long on the Grass, and Opus 42 winning the Gasparilla 7/8 at Tampa. Among the first crop stallions that are going to stud, you just mentioned Golden Pal. Who else are you going to send mares to, out of curiosity, Tony?
We are sending mares to, we're sending, I'll tell you what, we had a nice filly that won also, that we bred, and our partners and owners, Stella Noir. She won at Santa Anita, 6.5. I'm saying this because her dam is going to go to Mandaloon. We're breeding three mares to Mandaloon. We are also sending mares to Golden Pal. But let me see. We have one mare going to Olympiad.
Okay.
The other stallion that that we're excited about and that we are going to be going to is Nashville.
Oh, wow.
Windstar.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Interesting. Nashville Olympiad, I'm just looking at the crops. Tony's got a lovely website, rosehill-farm.com, for all the information about, and obviously, you know, works with a lot of people. Clearly, you have a big relationship with Keith DeSormo. I see Texas Red covers and Exaggerator, but you from a commercial standpoint, it's something we talk about with Sid, you know, covering with first crop stallions. It's a popular approach.
Well, yeah, right now, you know, it's a popular approach. It's something that keeps us in business. Really, I mean, it's I know that a lot of people think we should breed more, but to Proven Sires, and I wish we all could, but in this business, if we are breeding commercial, we got to give the people what they want, and right now that's what they're asking for, and that's what we got to give them.
Well, there's going to be just looking at the newly turned short yearlings, and there's some very interesting babies on the page. Promises Fulfilled and McKenzie.
Game Winner.
Yep, Game Winner and Higher Power and Taprit Complexity. They all look gorgeous. Tony, congratulations on this unique double with Arno and with Mark Grier, and continued success. I'm delighted to have you on.
Thank you for your call, and best of luck this year. Thank you, sir.
Not at all.
My
Tony,
pleasure.
You got it. Tony Ocampo, everybody. Rose Hill Farm. How fun. What a great way to end, kind of bookending the show with Arno Delacour this morning to start us off, and that coincidence. In fact, the show I paired up a lot of topics, Jason Barkley's visit and the PRP treatment, and that got us to Dr. Allday. Hammer, of course, with starting back at Santa Anita, which is wonderful, and Andy Serling of the New York Racing Association. Good luck if you're playing today. And back tomorrow, Sid, by the way, mentioned Sid, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale tomorrow. We'll get Papo on, we'll handicap something, maybe Gulfstream or Tampa. And today, Tuesday, let's see what we got for options. I think back to just, Mahoning Valley, Parks, Sunland, and Turf Paradise today for a Tuesday after the holiday. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Replay 6 to 9 here on Sirius XM. Archive podcast later at the website and wherever you listen to podcasts. Talk to you tomorrow. Thanks.
Sirius XM Radio. He Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the